Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
James Anderson is back on the line. James, we're going to hit a few news items from the weekend as we head into week 8 of the fantasy basketball season. Then we'll make our all NBA picks as we near the one-third mark, essentially, of the 2021-2022 NBA season. So we'll do that at the end of the pod. But first, James, both Isaiah Thomas and Michael Beasley have tweeted in the last 2 hours that they just want to sign with the team and play basketball. Over under 7.5 combined games played this season for Isaiah and Beasley?
Under. Yeah, I mean, that's not something I'm taking any pleasure in or anything like that, but doesn't seem like that'll happen.
Yeah, Isaiah especially has really been making a spirited effort to get back on a team. It feels like we're due for like every 3 months or so, we get like a really sad tweet like this from Isaiah after his agent, you know, has apparently struck out on another workout. But he last played for New Orleans, I think, in 3 games last season. Could potentially finally be the end of the line for Isaiah, who turned 33 already in February. I want to start with a few news items. Like I said, the Houston Rockets have suddenly won 6 straight NBA basketball games. And, you know, 4 of those wins have come against Oklahoma City twice, Orlando and New Orleans. But they do have a win over Chicago. They have a win over a decent Charlotte team in that span. Coincidentally, Jalen Green has missed like 5 3/4 of those 6 games with a hamstring injury. He's still day-to-day and kind of out indefinitely. So we're seeing a lot of Garrison Matthews, who's, you know, come on and hit a ton of threes out of nowhere for this team. Eric Gordon playing well. Christian Wood has played well. But the good thing is for Houston, they were so bad early on that despite winning 6 in a row, they are still essentially right there for last place in the Western Conference. And really in no danger of messing up their chances at getting the top pick in the 2022 draft.
No, and especially considering that, you know, they will be probably trying to move on from guys like Eric Gordon, maybe even Christian Wood as the season goes on, and then Jalen Green will get back into the mix. I definitely don't think it's a coincidence. You know, I mean, the vast majority of rookies, especially rookie guards, are pretty big net negatives. And back when they were at full strength, it definitely seemed like it was just basically a non-functioning offense where it was just guys kind of taking turns trying to go one-on-one. So I think they actually sort of have a bit more of an identity, a bit more of a kind of a clear hierarchy in the offense with him gone. So as you've mentioned, they've beaten up on, you know, 3 of the worst teams in the league during this winning streak. But you know, guys like Jayshon Tate, Kenyon Martin. I mean, those are guys that are going to give it their all when they're out there. So, you know, it's not that surprising that they've won any one of those games. It's a little surprising that they've been able to string six together, though.
Yeah, Jayshon Tate has been fantastic. Wood, like I said, has been really good. He's had some huge fantasy games over the last couple of weeks. Where are you at overall on Jalen Green? And again, he hasn't played in a week and a half, and the sample size before that still relatively limited. And I'm going to go out on a limb and assume you were not tuned in to all four quarters of every Houston Rockets game this season. But I know you were really high on Jalen Green coming into the year. Are these like essentially the same level of struggles that you expected he would go through the first 2 months?
I didn't think he would have struggled this much. I still think he's got a really bright future. Still think he's going to be a franchise player for Houston long term, but you know, I certainly think Evan Mobley is clearly a much better long term prospect at this point. And you know, Scotty Barnes, I think that's pretty close as well. So I think it's, you know, those guys have basically been much better than I expected, and Green's been a little bit worse than I expected.
I think with Green, if you throw out like his, if you look, he's played what, I think like 19 games. If you throw out his like 9 worst games of the year and look at his 10 best games of the year, the numbers are a lot more representative, I think, of what we thought he would be maybe on a season long basis. You know, 18 points per game, not doing much in terms of rebounds or assists, both under 3 per game, but 44% from the field, 35% from 3, 87% at the line. So a lot of those games where he's looked comfortable, been able to get into a groove, we've seen the Jalen Green we expected. But I think some of the like disastrous, you know, 4 of 16, 4 of 14, you know, high turnover games that he's had, I think are making his season long numbers look a little bit worse than, you know, like half the time I think he's actually looked pretty good. He's just had some really, really bad games that are dragging down his overall profile.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the times when, you know, when his shot's not falling, I know that he's said that he wants to be, you know, a playmaker, and he wants to be a better defender and stuff like that. But, you know, as things currently stand, he's, you know, the tape doesn't really back that up. He looks really bad defensively, both from just being in the right place and given the right amount of effort. So when his shots aren't falling, I mean, he's one of the more destructive players in the league. But just given the type of player he is and the fact that he's a rookie, that's not surprising. It's not like, I don't think anyone thought he was going to be a guy that was really impacting winning as a rookie. But yeah, when the shot's not falling, it's pretty ugly right now.
So I think we have a pretty definitive bottom five right now. And I think these are the five teams that a lot of people would have pegged, at least four of them. Houston, OKC, New Orleans, Orlando, and Detroit. And there's a few teams that are pretty close to that group in terms of record. But those are the five that when you look at a lot of the metrics or even just the eye test, it's like those look like the five worst teams pretty much on a night-to-night basis. Is there another team that you could see eventually joining that fray, whether it's, you know, performance fall off or a team that, you know, kind of tries to rebuild and get into that mix? I mean, I'm talking San Antonio is kind of right there in terms of record. It doesn't feel like they've been as bad as those teams, and they're maybe not trying to be as bad as those teams. Sacramento, close. I mean, Portland, depending on what happens with the Damian Lillard situation, that we'll touch on it a little bit. And then Indiana in the East. I mean, they're the third worst team. There's a bit of a gap between Indiana and Orlando and Detroit. But that's another team that if they decide to pivot, you know, could ultimately enter that mix as well.
Yeah, I think the three to keep an eye on would be the Pacers, Blazers, and Kings. The Spurs have an even point differential right now, even though they are 8-13. But the Pacers, I think we touched on this last week, that right. It just seems like something's wrong there, and they need to kind of move at least one or two key players and just kind of switch things up a little bit. And, you know, with a new GM in Portland, maybe they're willing to tear it down. I think that they probably would be well served to tear it down rather than, you know, if you do just the Godfather picks offer to get Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum, like that's still like Ben Simmons and Damian Lillard isn't going to be some sort of duo that takes you to the conference finals or anything like that. So I think they'd be better served just trading all the vets and starting over. So I could see that happening. The Kings are kind of bad enough that even if they didn't do that type of move, like trade De'Aaron Fox and trade Harrison Barnes, even if they didn't do that, they could still be bottom five at the end of the year. But if they did do that, then they would almost certainly be that bad.
Yeah, the Kings have been like just competent enough these last couple of years to always seemingly be picking in that like 5 to 10 range instead of a little bit higher where you'd prefer to be. And we don't have to go deep on Indiana because we did do that either last week or the week before. But I mean, that team has not picked higher than 10th. And that was the Paul George pick in 2010. They have not picked any higher than 10th since 1989 when they took George McLeod with the 7th overall pick. So this is a team that's very firmly in that like Herb Cole 2000s Milwaukee Bucks mindset of like never bottom out. It's always better to, you know, finish a game or two out of the playoffs than be the worst team in the league. But it does feel like it is kind of moving in a direction where that would make sense. And I think the same in a lot of ways does apply to Portland. And Portland's in a slightly different situation because you have a bona fide superstar in Damian Lillard. But there's a report this morning from Chris Haynes saying that Dame is not satisfied with the Blazers roster and direction. John Serrani of The Athletic also in on that. Of course, as always seems to be the case, like Lillard immediately refutes that. On social media, but I this is like the fourth time now in the last year that we've gotten a report like this. I think it's not just like error after error in terms of sourcing. But I thought the most interesting nugget from that story is according to sources, and again, Lillard is refuting this, he had pushed ownership, and this was before all the Neil O'Shea stuff, before the hiring of Chauncey Billups, but he had pushed ownership to trade for Ben Simmons. And you know, that package would almost certainly include CJ McCollum. The Sixers were demanding multiple picks and multiple swaps, and Portland ultimately declined. But things were a little different back then than they are now, especially with regard to Simmons. But to me, that doesn't seem like a situation that all of a sudden bails out the Blazers and makes them like a massively better team.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you would still be playing two just complete non-shooters in your best lineup in Nurkic and Simmons. So, I mean, I just don't. And also, from the Blazers' perspective, this might be one of those situations where the clear best basketball move is for them to be the team that, like, initiates a Lillard trade rather than Lillard asking out. Because I think last season will probably go down as the last year of Lillard's absolute prime, and you're better off trading him now while you can still get a haul for him than letting it drag out much longer to the point where people might start wondering if that's a negative value contract.
Right. I mean, Lillard is certainly not getting any younger, came into the league a little bit later. So, I think he's only been in the league like 10 years, but when you come in as a 22-year-old, you're on a little bit of a different clock. I just don't see them doing that unless Lillard himself initiates it. I saw some Blazers writers essentially shutting that down. You know, they're like, ticket sales are already lagging this year. Like the last thing this team needs is to trade the guy that's become, the icon of the city. But I think objectively it makes a ton of sense, right? I mean, this team is going nowhere. They've already gone nowhere with this core the last few years. And when the tweaks that you're making are like bringing in Larry Nance or bringing in Robert Covington, I think in retrospect, it's easier to say, but those were never going to be the difference between making you the sixth or seventh best team in the West to all of a sudden you're a title contender. And neither of those moves have been all that impactful so far. And they really don't have a way out, especially with their contract situation. You don't have a young asset on this team who you could kind of build around outside of Dame. So their timeline, is probably a little further along than you would like it to be for a team that's in their position. So, yeah, I think objectively, you're totally right. It makes sense for them to be the team to try to trade Dame, while his value is still at its zenith. But I think the path that it seems like Lillard wants to take is, I don't think he wants to be the bad guy. I think he wants to stay in Portland and move the pieces around him, which is considerably harder. You don't have that kind of leverage.
I mean, if he wants to do right by the franchise, I mean, honestly, the best thing he could do is like quietly go to ownership or whoever, right, and just say like, hey, like, can we quietly try to find a better spot for me. Mm-hmm. James Harden did the Rockets a big favor by asking out. I mean, if he had just kept playing it out in Houston, they would have never gotten that type of massive haul. And, you know, like the Paul George, Russell Westbrook, they did OKC a favor. I mean, like, it's not the end of the world if you're able to trade these guys when they still have this sort of peak value. But once it gets to that, like, John Wall type of point, then you're just kind of screwed.
Right. And, of course, Lillard is not to that level as a player, but at the same time, he's also been injured and has played like by far his worst season in a long time. I mean, he's probably off to even a worse start than he was as a rookie when he was great right away. So like kind of a weird time for this to come out. You know, it's not like he's lighting the world on fire and they're losing every night. It's like he's kind of a part of the reason that they have sputtered so far. But I think the biggest thing is like optics, right? Where if you do go that route of quietly, you know, deciding that it's probably best for both parties, like somebody kind of has to take blame publicly. And I think that's tough to, you know, if both sides are willing to say like, yes, we went about this mutually, that's great. I think there's usually so much pride involved that's harder to accomplish.
I just think you got to take like the long view if you're Dame Lillard. I mean, like KG is still beloved in Minnesota. And I think James Harden will go down as a favorite among Rockets fans. Like it doesn't have to mean that you're the bad guy. Like you can just explain, like you left it all out there. You tried for years and years and years, and you gave them your best years. And, you know, just it is what it is. Like you're
right.
The fans not showing up right now, like it's not like that's going to get better over these next couple of years. And the fans are going to show up if you get a good young product. That they can get excited about again.
I think a lot of it too is determined by where the player jumps to. Like a lot of the vitriol that was initially directed at Harden, and I think you're right, this always ends up fading. It seems like a really big deal for like a couple weeks or even a couple months, but you know, I haven't really heard any complaints this season from Rockets fans. You know, so far in the distance, it's whatever. But a lot of the vitriol directed at Harden was because he forced his way out of Houston to go play with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in Brooklyn. And in this scenario, I mean, I don't know where Lillard would end up. I mean, Philly obviously makes some sense based on what we know. But, he's not going to go join LeBron, Westbrook and Davis in L.A. So it's like I don't think there would be this, you know, this onslaught of like criticism lobbied at him for like jumping to some sort of super team, because I don't think that situation's really out there as a possibility.
No, I agree.
The NBA season is underway and Yahoo is excited to go big on daily fantasy basketball this season. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contests, which are now shark-free. To celebrate Yahoo going big on DFS, as well as Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo's giving all users the opportunity to claim a free $10 in site credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 site credit to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests. Yahoo will have daily NBA contests all season long as well. Play a single game contest of your choice throughout the week, then join Yahoo's weekly Friday main NBA contest to compete for large cash prizes. Play daily fantasy basketball on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim that free $10 offer and get started today.
Thrive Fantasy is back for another season of fantasy basketball, and they're running guaranteed contests every single day this NBA season. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes who have the biggest impacts on the game. Sign up today and you'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription that will give you access to everything on our website, not just our NBA content, all of our other sports, a ton of value wrapped up in that free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you can go about claiming your free RotoWire subscription. Step 1, visit rotowire.com/thrive, that's T-H-R-I-V-E. Step 2, deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. Finally, step 3, play in your first paid contest and then you'll receive that free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Thrive Fantasy, check it out today.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions. And even more so, making the right decision. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app.
WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in six U.S. states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding nationwide. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. All you have to do is download the WynnBET app right now. That's WynnBET, W-Y-N-N-B-E-T. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast.
I want to mention quickly, we don't really have much to discuss here, but LaMelo, Terry Rozier, McDaniels, Mason Plumlee, all set to miss multiple games, this week. They're in COVID protocols. Hornets have three games on the schedule. They'll almost certainly miss all three of those. So we should see more Gordon Hayward, Miles Bridges, Kelly Oubre played almost 40 minutes the other night. Ish Smith started in place of LaMelo Ball. So for fantasy purposes, obviously make sure those guys are out of your lineup. The last thing I want to hit on before we get to All-NBA, we got some, I don't know if I would go as far as to say disturbing, but concerning photos of Zion Williamson, who is now traveling with the Pelicans and was in a Jordan sweatsuit on the bench for one of their games over the weekend. Not looking super slim. And this is really not news to anybody. We've seen a few photos over the last couple of months leak out. But for a guy that is, you know, purportedly supposed to be back within a couple of weeks, he does not look like he is really remotely in game shape.
No. You know, I mean, this is what, like, at RotoWire, we have to put these notes up on the site, like, whenever there's any kind of report about, like, the length of his absence or, you know, him ramping up or not ramping up, like, but I mean, I really think you just gotta understand that, like, the Pelicans have not been forthright about this at all, because they've been trying to stay on the good side of, well, not that they're on the good side, but, like, that, you know, Zion's camp, like, they don't want any information out there about him. So, you know, we're probably going to be lied to by, you know, whoever's telling us about his timeline and stuff like that. I wouldn't expect him back this month. I don't know. I would probably take the under on 30 games played for him this season. I kind of think he will come back at some point. He is going to theoretically get that max extension offer this offseason, and he probably wants to, you know, try to end the year on some sort of high note in terms of showing them that I don't know.
He's, like, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Like, I don't know if he even cares at this point. Like, the whole thing is so weird. I think I had written down over under 35 games played, and I would also take the under. I think the best case at this point, it becomes just a math problem, you know, where you start to look at back-to-backs and whatnot. If he plays in 35 games the rest of the way, and you're someone who took him in, like, the third round of a fantasy draft, like, you're thrilled if he gets to 35 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the most, I mean, and to me, he obviously wasn't someone that I was on, but I mean, I think kind of until further notice, he's kind of a guy for fantasy where he's probably not worth the headache, because you're never going to get good intel in terms of any sort of injury timeline where he's concerned. And he's always going to be at risk of re-injuring, you know? So it's just, it's like, at least with Michael Porter, like, you can just cut him. Right. With Zion, I think that there is a case for, like, eventually cutting him, but, like, you know, it's also, we just don't know. Like, so you don't want to cut him and then have him come back and play 30 games. You're probably not picking anyone up that's any good anyway. So it's just a really frustrating situation if you did draft him. And I think in future years, unless there's just a big discount on draft day, I just don't really think he's worth the headache.
Right. It'll be interesting to see if this changes at some point, because right now, I mean, the Pelicans have basically bent the knee to Zion's camp, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to remain, you know, or at least attempt to get into his good graces. And like, at some point, that's not going to be the case, right? Like, I think ideally it turns into kind of like a Lonzo Ball situation where there was like this huge kind of shadow hanging over him because of his family. And now we're what, like 5 years into his career, and we haven't heard anything about LeVar Ball in like 2 or 3 years. It's kind of been ideal. And like right now, like, you know, at the time, like when Lonzo was a rookie, it was hard to imagine LeVar Ball ever going away. Just like it's hard to imagine, you know, Zion's camp kind of controlling the narrative. But I mean, is this still going to be the case when he's in like his age 28 season down the road? Like at some point he's got to take control here. And I don't know if it's a situation where he gets out in New Orleans and suddenly he becomes more cooperative. It's like you said, for fantasy, it's really hard to say, like, where would you draft him for next season? Like, I have no idea. We have no idea if he's even going to be on the Pelicans next year.
Well, I think I've made the Kawhi comparison. Like, yep. It's just going to be a Kawhi situation without that level of on-court production or that level of off-court work ethic where, like, you're never going to, like, Kawhi's camp never, like, he had that surgery. Like, that was so hush-hush, and we still don't even, I don't think they ever said exactly what the exact surgery was. And I think that'll be the case with Zion for pretty much his whole career. You know, with Lonzo, it was sort of more of like a first take type of like media driven narrative that like there was something wrong with like his family. Like, I don't think it ever prevented him from like giving a team like the Pelicans, you know, his best effort and, you know, putting in the work in the offseason. And like, it's not like he was demanding X, Y, and Z. At least it didn't seem that way. It was more just kind of a people knew who LeVar Ball was. And so it was thought to be a distraction. I think with Zion, it's much more like the Kawhi thing where you're just never going to get any sort of real-time information about what the guy is thinking or what he's going through physically.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the Ball family thing did play out more in the media and actually never really seemed to affect like coaching or the franchise all that much, whereas this is a complete opposite where it's like you don't really hear anything in the media at all from Zion or Zion's camp, but it all kind of plays out behind the scenes as far as New Orleans is concerned. But bottom line, this continues to be a massive mess. You know, apologies to those who did draft Zion in fantasy drafts. I also did not end up with him anywhere, but there's certainly a point at which I would have taken him. You know, I mean, it's not like I had him completely crossed off. So in some ways, I guess we're lucky we kind of dodged that bullet. Let's get to all NBA. So entering Monday night, all 30 teams have played somewhere between 21 and 26 games. The average teams played about 24. So we're coming up on, you know, like the 1/3 mark in the season, which is a good time to kind of lay out what the all NBA teams would be so far. And, you know, going through and doing this was, I think, more difficult for me than it's been in years past. There were a few shoe-ins, you know, that I felt good about on all three teams, but you know, looking at even last season's all NBA teams, there's 7 guys who made an all NBA team last year who I do not have on any of my 3 all NBA teams. And most of that is injury related. Some of it's performance related. We'll get to those players. But we'll start, James, with your NBA first team. Give me your center, your 2 forwards and your 2 guards.
Yeah, I will just sort of echo what you said. This was very, very challenging, especially on the third team. Because there has been sort of a changing of the guard a little bit, it seems, largely just kind of an age and health related changing of the guard. But First team, I thought the first 4 spots are super easy, obviously. Jokic, Giannis, KD, Steph, lock those 4 in. Those 4 will be on the team. Those 4 will be top 4 in MVP voting as long as they stay healthy. Like, that's an ironclad top 4. And then I put Trae Young as my guard next to Steph Curry. It's weird because I remember, you know, in the playoffs last year, people, like, he's never gotten the proper amount of praise, and he hasn't been, you know, given the right amount of respect. But then last year in the playoffs, people were like, oh man, this is Trae Young's, you know, kind of coming out party. He's showing everyone how good he is. And then it's like everyone just forgot that because they're just looking at the win loss column of the Hawks, who have dealt with a ton of injuries. And he's just somehow like not even in the mix. But he's having a really good season, and he has continued to score very efficiently despite these rule changes. And, you know, he's one of the best passers in the league. He's one of the best scorers in the league. He's the engine of that team. I mean, they're 500, but I mean, they've been without DeAndre Hunter, you know, Cam Reddish, and like, it just seems like they're always down like two or three of their top eight guys, and they've still been able to make it work. I think, you know, by the time we get to the end of the year, I would expect the Hawks, honestly, to finish with a better record than like the Bulls, for instance. And so I think, to me, it's, you don't want to get too swept up in a team's one loss record, especially given absences that he's had to make up for. And I think he's the best player of the guys that I considered, and he's really just had his best year to date.
Yeah, I'm surprised there hasn't been more Trae Young buzz as well. You laid out a pretty compelling case. You know, the biggest thing you notice, I think, year over year is that reduction in free throw attempts from 8.7 down to 5.7. But I mean, he's shooting it noticeably more efficiently from three, which has always been kind of this anomaly with him where, you know, the shot looks so good and you see the highlights and you're like, this guy's got to be a 40% shooter, where, you know, coming into this year, he was like below 35%. For his career, and he's up at 39% now on 7 attempts per game. He's at 89% from the line. Scoring is up. Assists are exactly the same. He's, you know, right near the top of the league there. 2.7 makes per game from three, and most importantly, 46% from the field. So, you know, the Hawks are a 500 team, but yeah, you know, I don't know how much you weigh team success in this. I guess when we're only at the third mark in the season, it's hard to put too much stock into a team record. And you know, I'm not going to put a player on like an 18-win team at the end of the year on first team all NBA, but you know, I don't hold the Hawks being a 500 team with a bunch of injuries and what's been just kind of a weird season so far, I don't hold that against Trae Young. So while I do not have him as my first team guard, he was the other guy I considered along with who I ultimately went with, which was Chris Paul from the Phoenix Suns. So I know the numbers maybe aren't super impressive for Chris Paul, but this is a little bit of a, you know, kind of a reward for how good Phoenix has been. Obviously, they had the winning streak. He has, once again, not missed any time due to injury. He's at 10.1 assists per game. He's been ridiculously efficient, super clutch, as always. He's at 2 steals per game. Just continues to be the engine of that Suns team. So, you know, ultimately, if you look at the numbers, I do think Trae Young probably has the advantage. Obviously, a much better scorer. You know, he's at 10-plus more points per game than Chris Paul. The assists are similar, so I get that. But, you know, despite the fact that I just said I don't put too much stock into team success, I feel like the Suns have been so good, and Paul really deserves this spot.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I had him on my second team, and he was one of my easier picks for my second team. So, you know, it's tough because it's just like really hard to, it kind of speaks to how weak the field is that Paul has a case for that spot. I mean, he is probably the guy who is, there's probably the biggest gap between just his traditional stats versus his impact.
Right.
And a lot of that impact is stuff that you don't really see. And it's probably more behind the scenes type of stuff, but, I certainly think he's more deserving than like Devin Booker, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, Booker was a name who I thought about for my second or third team, and we'll get to him. Was there anyone else you considered besides Trae Young and Chris Paul? Like, was there, you know, is Luka Doncic really in the mix here? Obviously, the counting stats have been really good, but like, how tough of a decision was it to go with Trae Young?
It wasn't that hard, to be honest. I don't know if he's going to be my pick at the end of the season. You know, like, Luka Doncic is certainly talented enough to, you know, if Luka outplays Trae from now until the end of the season, then that'll be over 2/3 of the season, and I'd end up putting Luka there. But, I mean, full disclosure, I didn't even put Luka on any of my teams. He's just been that inefficient, and I just didn't think he'd earned it to this point. And it's not a, the way, like I do all NBA teams a little bit different than I do like all-star teams. Like I'm really trying to reward the guys for like what they've actually done on the court. And I'm not trying to factor in sort of past seasons and who is the best player just in a vacuum. It's more just about like who's provided the most value to date.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we're in agreement on those first four who you mentioned. Jokic, Giannis, Durant, Curry. I think those are all locks of all locks. But yeah, that second guard spot, somewhat up in question. Who do you have on your second team?
The only two that I felt pretty good about were Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler. At center, I went with Karl-Anthony Towns. I went with DeMar DeRozan in the second forward spot. And I went with James Harden in the second guard spot. But, you know, like I said, I don't feel amazing about Towns, DeRozan, or Harden there.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little hairy. And you start to see names that you're like, is this guy really going to be a second team All-NBA player at the end of the year? And the way things are going right now, you know, the answer is yes. But we'll see, you know, how it plays out, you know, as guys like Lillard, Embiid, LeBron, Bradley Beal, you know, guys who've kind of been in this mix the last few years and have been banged up early on or just haven't played that well. You know, if they pick it up, obviously these spots become a little more in question. But I also have DeRozan on my team. I also have Butler. I felt like those two were close to locks for me. Butler for sure, especially if you look at a lot of the advanced metrics, he's way up there in a ton of categories. I have Trae Young as one of my guards, and I went Zach LaVine at the other guard, and then Rudy Gobert reluctantly as my center. So Gobert, Butler, DeRozan, Trae Young, Zach LaVine.
Yeah, I think that's all very defensible. I mean, I think there's a statistically there's a like in terms of like the impact metrics, like I think Gobert over Towns makes sense. I just think, you know, I like just how efficient Towns is as a scorer from anywhere on the court. I mean, he's just really. We all know how good he is, but I feel like he just doesn't really quite get the amount of credit he deserves, partly because of like the market he plays in, but he's just been so efficient and honestly, he probably should be getting like four more shots a game than he gets. But I mean, Gobert, probably, you know, top three defensive player in the regular season still. And, you know, it's the Jazz are a good enough team where I could see wanting to make sure that someone on that team is represented.
Yeah, and that's always part of the case for Gobert. At least it has been these last few seasons. You know, when they're the one or the two seed seemingly every year at the top of the West, that certainly bolsters his case. I don't think either of us expected to be putting DeMar DeRozan on a second team All-NBA at this point in the season, but career high or second highest points per game, I guess, of his career is how I should say that. 26.4 points per game, 5.3 rebounds, 4.1 assists, almost a steal per game, 50% from the field, 89% at the line. And he's not taking a ton, obviously never does from three, but shooting a respectable 33.3% from three, which is better than a lot of the superstar names that we've discussed and may potentially leave off these All-NBA teams. I mean, he has been really, really good. And I think it's almost hard to make an argument that he doesn't belong on a second team, partially because, you know, you start to look at the other options at forward and it's tough to make a case for, you know, one or two other guys over the Butler DeRozan tandem.
Yeah, he increased his usage from 26% to 30%, and his true shooting is almost identical. And he's one of the few guys where his free throw rate has not fallen off
with the
rule changes. So just, you know, scoring, he's giving you volume, he's giving you efficiency. Part of the, you know, he's a big part of the reason, obviously, why the Bulls have been as good as they've been. And yeah, I mean, this was a huge shock for me. You know, when we're from like a fantasy standpoint, that's definitely my biggest miss of the year. Just not having DeRozan on any teams. And I even remember like being on the clock in some drafts and him being there and me just being like, you know, like, I don't know.
Give me Tobias Harris.
Yeah, well, not quite that, but I mean, probably give me like some younger unproven guy who's not playing nearly as well. And so, yeah, I mean, that was just a huge miss. I think that at the end of the year, you're going to see DeRozan on a lot of league winners for fantasy. So big surprise. And I was definitely wrong about him and the Bulls before the season.
I mean, you could have very easily told me that he would replicate last year's production. I thought the assists would come down, and they have. That's just a product of the guys around him being so much different than what he had in San Antonio. But like, I would not have been convinced that he would average five more points per game on this team in Chicago than he did as essentially the number one guy for most of last season in San Antonio. Like it really is shocking. I mean, I wouldn't say you should beat yourself up for, you know, mostly avoiding him in drafts.
Well, I'm going to continue to beat myself up.
All right. So let's move to All-NBA third team. I'll let you lead this one off as well. Give me your full third team. Yeah, I know.
Gobert and Zach LaVine are two guys that we've already talked about a little bit. Got them on there. You know, I ended up going with LaMelo Ball in the other guard spot. I think he's the engine of that whole team. He's kind of the identity of that team. And, you know, there's times when he does something that you're just kind of shaking your head, usually on the defensive end, but I thought he had the edge, a slight edge over a lot of other deserving candidates at guard. And then at forward, I went with Draymond Green and Anthony Edwards. And I know Edwards is probably considered a guard by most people, but he actually plays small forward in the Timberwolves' most used lineup with Pat Beverly and D'Angelo Russell at the guard spots. So I felt like I could get away with sneaking Edwards in there at forward. But that last forward spot, just incredibly weak. Yep. You know, there were all kinds of mediocre candidates for that spot. And, you know, we can get into those in a second, but I felt like Edwards, you know, I think his he should be the second option and Towns should be the first option and not the other way around. So I kind of hold that against Edwards, but I also, I think I hold it against Towns maybe more so than against Edwards, just for Towns not sort of imposing his will on the offense to the extent that he should. And I think Edwards, what he's doing defensively is just not something that I thought we'd really ever see, let alone in his second year, where he's, you know, he's often guarding the other team's best wing and he's doing all right. I mean, he's not like a all defense level player, but, you know, I kind of thought defensively, just from kind of a being in the right place effort, I thought he'd be kind of more like Zach LaVine or, you know, maybe even like Andrew Wiggins at this stage of his career. And he's bringing it. So, you know, you don't want to be too harsh on the, you know, sort of how hard he plays on both ends of the ball and ask him to be more passive on offense, because I think that that sort of intensity he plays with carries over defensively, and you definitely don't want to lose that.
So one slice of the blame that you did not mention is D'Angelo Russell taking 17 shots a game and shooting 38%. I think he's number one on my list. Then Towns, then Edwards. I'm not going to fault Edwards for forcing his way to being essentially the number one guy. Okay. I will say I did not consider Anthony Edwards. I like the pick. I think it's defensible. I don't think he'll end up getting enough votes. I think the efficiency is still a little bit of an issue with him. We'll see if that rises, then maybe. But maybe the only thing more unlikely than DeMar DeRozan making an all-NBA second team is us having a defensible rationale for putting two Minnesota Timberwolves on all-NBA teams at this point in the season. Like this is the most unlikely thing that could possibly have happened.
Yeah. I mean, if they just think where this team would be if they had just done some good things besides having Towns and Edwards on the roster.
Imagine if you swapped out D'Angelo Russell for even like Ricky Rubio.
Yeah, just anyone, like just, you know, Tyus Jones, you know, whoever, and just use that salary to fill the wing. They're kind of in a tough spot because they just don't have the resources to fill in around Edwards and Towns because of how much money they're paying Russell. But I was comparing Edwards, you know, you mentioned Edwards' efficiency and it's, you know, it's not great, but like I was comparing him to like Paul George, and he's actually been more efficient than Paul George. I believe that. So like I there's no candidate for this sixth forward spot that has a really strong case.
No, not at all. And you know, one note on that kind of glut of wings that Minnesota has, like if even one of those guys were to hit, it's like right now they're kind of cycling between Torian Prince, Josh Okogie, Jaden McDaniels, Malik Beasley. I mean, Jake Layman is still there. Nas Reed still picks up minutes. Jared Vanderbilt has been starting at one spot. Like to me, like all those guys are just like the same. Like they're all just like a 72 overall on NBA 2K. And like, you know, I don't think you feel like fantastic about any of those guys long-term. I think McDaniels still has a decent amount of upside, but like Malik Beasley's fallen off considerably from what his reputation was even a year ago. Having the flexibility with that Russell spot to be able to go get someone more impactful and somebody who's not going to shoot 38% would be huge. But I mean, you also have to keep in mind, Russell's basically on this team. Like part of it is his salary goes to just like being Carl Towns' friend.
Yeah. I mean, it's too bad that it required a max salary. Like DeAndre Jordan was on the Nets because he was KD and Kyrie's friend, but at least he was making like $15 million a year. If they just had someone like Juan Toscano-Anderson, like as
listen to what we're saying right now.
It's such a drop off between Edwards and whoever you want to say their third best players.
The next CBA needs to have a friendship exception. Mid-level, like, oh, he's signing the mid-level, the taxpayer mid-level friendship exception. Okay, so your third team was Gobert, Anthony Edwards, Draymond, Zach LaVine, LaMelo Ball. My third team, Karl Anthony Towns at center, Draymond at one forward. I went with Paul George as the other forward. Efficiency be damned. It looked a little better before the Clippers kind of hit the skids these last few games. They're now down to basically being a 500 team. But he's still at 25 points per game, 7 rebounds, 5.5 assists. played really, really well on the defensive end. He's essentially just not shooting it well from three at all. He's down at 32%, which would be by far his worst number since his rookie year when he was barely playing. So I think eventually that comes up. But yeah, like you said, I did not feel great about that last forward spot. And then my backcourt is LaMelo Ball and James Harden.
Okay, so we have the exact same six guards.
Yeah.
And five of the same six forwards and the same three centers, basically.
Right, exactly. So this brings us, I think, to what is maybe even the most fun part of this discussion is like a lot of these names who we did not list and guys who would almost seem like borderline shoe-ins coming into the year. Here are just a few that I jotted down for me that didn't make my list. Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic, Devin Booker, Ja Morant, Jared Allen, who's sneakily played really, really well, Donovan Mitchell, Joel Embiid, LeBron James, Darius Garland, Jonas Valanciunas, and Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I considered all of them. Two more that I'll throw in there. I was pretty close to going with Evan Mobley in the sixth forward spot. I think he's been better than Jared Allen. And like when he plays, they're a top four or five team in the East. And when he doesn't play, they suck. And he's, you know, defensively, he does it. He's so good defensively. He's good at everything offensively. So he doesn't take anything off the table really. And he allows them to play a bunch of different lineups that they might not otherwise be able to play. And it's very rare for any rookie forward / big man to ever be in consideration for an all NBA third team. And I think that he's that type of special exception. And then, you know, you would never have a guy who doesn't start for his own team make an all NBA team, but just based on advanced stats, I think Montrezl Harrell just deserves a shout out because pretty much any leaderboard you go to, Montrezl Harrell's like top 10 in terms of just impact when he's on the court. And I think he's got to be the heavy favorite for sixth man of the year at this point.
Yeah, I know odds wise, it's Tyler Hero. But it's basically a two-man race between those two. I mean, Harrell has been, I think, arguably from where he's drafted to how productive he's been is one of the biggest surprises, if not the biggest surprise in fantasy basketball. And he's been productive in the past. I think he was just such a bad fit with that Lakers team and that they were just so out of sorts that we kind of forgot how productive he can be. I do wonder, you know, they're supposed to get Thomas Bryant back in a few weeks, Rui Hachimura as well. You know, maybe they end up moving him to a slightly reduced role almost by default just because they have too many guys. But he certainly hasn't deserved it. I mean, I think that's a rightful shout out to Montrezl Harrell. Well,
and I mean, I haven't watched many Wizards games at all, but when I have watched them, like you can feel his impact. Like when he's out there, like he's looked like the best player on the court for stretches. And it's weird to see. I mean, he looks as athletic as ever. So, I mean, he deserves a lot of credit for just putting the work in and sort of staying at this level. And I would argue that they are 14-10 because they have been without Thomas Bryant and Rui Hachimura. And that if they try to give those guys too much of a role when they come back, it'll end up kind of costing them. In the playoff seeding.
Yeah, well, Davis Bertans has also missed time. That's been huge for them. They were able to pick up some wins while he was out. I mean, the weird thing with the Wizards is Bradley Beal is now almost averaging 10 fewer points per game than last season. And it just doesn't really feel like it's been talked about that much. Like, he was nowhere near consideration for me for any of those six guard spots. And it does feel like he's always kind of been, like, the odd man out these last few years, whether it's for the All-Star game or for All-NBA. But I mean, he's not even in the discussion, and you know, I think he missed a couple games early on. He's three missed games so far, but this is not a like LeBron or you know Joel Embiid situation where they're just kind of for now they're ruled out of this discussion because they missed too much time. Like he's only missed three games. He just does not look like himself.
No. Do you have any sort of theories or
not really?
Are there any sort of statistical like this will obviously regress going forward? Like what?
I mean, it's the three-point shooting. He's at 26% from three, so that's the obvious one. But at the same time, like, he's also just, you know, I'm looking at his last nine games, he's at 21% from three, but he's only taking 4.7 attempts per game. You know, that he was at 8.4 a couple of years ago. He was at 6.2 last year. So, you know, it's not like it's just like a pure cold shooting situation. I think he is among the players who has taken a hit to his free throw attempts, you know, due to the changes in rules. He's down almost four free throw attempts per game compared to last year. But I don't know. I mean, a lot of what you read is just like, oh, he's sacrificing scoring in the name of winning. But it's like, what does that really mean ultimately? Like, who are those shots going to, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't seem to jive. You would think that the Wizards would be at their best with him scoring a lot.
Right.
So I don't know. I think thankfully don't have him anywhere.
But yeah, me either.
Yeah, he's not really, I mean, I don't know. I think he's just happy to be in Washington for his whole career. But yeah, you kind of wonder if things don't kind of turn around, how he'll be thought of league-wide at the end of the season.
Yeah, the ironic thing with Bradley Beal is, like, everyone has just assumed that he's been lying this whole time about wanting to stay in Washington, and maybe he just actually does want that, and he's completely content as long as they're a decent team. I don't think you're going to agree with me on this, but I will say my toughest omission from all these teams was leaving off Anthony Davis. I wanted to put him as my third-team center. I know the stats maybe overstate his impact. Obviously, the Lakers have been a disaster, and he's contributed to that, especially with his shot selection on offense. But very quietly, it's been a really nice bounce-back year statistically. I mean, he's at almost 25 points per game, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.3 steals, 2.2 blocks, 52% overall from the field. You know, the jump shooting has remained a disaster, and you know, when he doesn't have that, he kind of becomes a different guy. But I think that has now overshadowed, you know, what he's at least attempted to do to try to keep this a respectable Lakers defense, because really no one else is contributing to that effort.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't really buy him as an option over like Towns or Gobert, but I think if you wanted to put him at a forward spot, that would be justifiable. And I mean, I honestly almost put LeBron on there, even though, like, I know he's played, what, like half the season?
I think he's missed 11 games already.
Yeah. I just, you know, I expect that he will have a spot, like, the next time we do anything like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never know. He's old enough, and he's dealt with enough nagging injuries in recent years where that's not a guarantee, but you know, I think you could argue that he still contributed more towards good basketball being played than someone like Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I mean, when he's been out there, he's been really, really good. I mean, the stats have been essentially where they've been at for the last 10 to 15 years, and the free throws are on the way up. You know, he was attempting like 1-2 free throws per game, but his last four appearances, he's taken 9, 11, 8, and 5. Free throw. So I don't know if he got in the ear of the league office or what, but the free throw rate is on the rise. That's always a good sign for LeBron. I think LeBron, Jason Tatum, Damian Lillard, Joel Embiid, and Luka Doncic are the guys that I think have the best chance to eventually play their way onto one of these teams. And as long as they stay healthy, they probably will. Is there anyone else in that category for you?
You know, I didn't really know, or you know, actually, yeah, I would. Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell might be heard from.
Sure.
How strongly did you consider Bobby Portis?
Okay, all right. Well, how strongly did you consider Jaden McDaniels if you want to play that game? I will say I did consider, like, this would have been pretty egregious, but I thought about just throwing Donovan Mitchell in at the other forward over Paul George. Like, he really plays no forward, so I don't think that would be allowed, but. I don't know. I feel like he's like a couple inches away from like maybe being able to pull off small forward. But I feel like he's really deserving this year. The other guy I wanted to ask you about is Ja Morant. And he's only missed a few games since the injury, but it does feel like that really sucked a lot of momentum out of his year. Did you consider him for one of those last guard spots?
Not really, just because I know how much time he's set to miss here.
Yeah, right.
And it, like, guard is the one, like, I didn't feel bad about, you know, forward's really the weak spot. Like, guard and center, there's still good enough options where I wouldn't have put someone like that on there. I mean, like LaMelo versus Ja, LaVine versus Ja, like I think it's close enough when everyone's at full strength that I would go with the two healthy guys. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, numbers wise, Morant certainly has a case. I do think had the injury not occurred, and I know we're kind of doing to this point, we're not trying to project out, but it's hard not to take that into account when you know this guy's going to miss several weeks beyond where he's already at. He's missed four games since suffering that injury against Atlanta. But I mean, 18 healthy games this year. He's at 25.3 points, 5.8 rebounds, 7.1 assists, 1.7 steals, 48% from the field, 36% from three. So, I mean, that steals number, you know, kind of belies some weaknesses still on the defensive end. But other than that, I mean, he's pretty much answered all the questions that we wanted him to answer. And I think if he doesn't get hurt, I definitely find a way to get him onto my third team. And I would maybe even consider him for that second spot next to Trae Young on the second team. But again, like you said, there's kind of a plethora of guard options that you could make a case for probably 8 to 9 guys. So it's not like if you're leaving him off, you're making some sort of egregious choice by picking someone else.
No.
All right. Anyone else that you want to hit on? Any stars or guys who are on the cusp?
I mean, I think Chris Middleton could get into the mix.
Right.
Just given how weak forward is, but, and I mean, I was joking about Bobby, but for fantasy, like Bobby Portis has just emerged as a real stud. I mean, he's been carrying a couple of my teams, and I think that there's this sort of narrative that he's all offense and no defense, and he certainly is better on offense than defense. But I think he's rarely looked like a huge negative on that end of the court. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, in playing almost 30 minutes a game, where I think, you know, these last few years, it's kind of been 18 to 22 minutes. You know, he's kind of this energy guy. I almost feel like the character that he became last year kind of like overtook like how productive of a player he actually is. You know, he kind of turned into this like cult hero, like almost like a Dellavedova type of thing. You're like, this guy's actually really good. And, you know, he's been forced into a situation now that's going to continue, you know, right? I mean, unless we really get like 2016 DeMarcus Cousins, which seems very unlikely. I mean, Bobby Portis is going to be playing 25 to 30 minutes as long as Brooke Lopez is out. And as of right now, that could be the entire regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think he holds his value over the rest of the year. Yeah. This isn't just a stream him for a few weeks type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that he kind of is what he is.
All right, man, I think we can wrap it up here. Appreciate you taking the time, doing the research into this All-NBA discussion. It was a lot of fun. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.